Welcome to the Deep Further Fact. It's a little tenuous to be starting your podcast career answering to criticism. I thought by this point that I would have moved on to the topics that are dearest to me, particularly those in economics and philosophy, some of which I touched upon in episode one. But this election season doesn't seem to want to end, and I received considerable pushback for my previous podcast, episode two, which I named Election Autopsy. Not because I said anything my listeners found particularly wrong, or at least egregiously wrong, but that there was a conspicuous absence of condemnation when I got to the topic of racism and misogyny, and so it seemed I was being an apologist for the campaign Trump seemed to run on. That the majority of my criticism was aimed at his temperament and lack of self-control and not the stuff that really counted, as it were. To be honest, my excuse is pretty flimsy. It had more to do with rushing to get my podcast published and launched than anything else. Now, you're probably not aware of this, but episode one and two were published simultaneously, and the reflection on the election, which was the basis for episode two, was the thing that kicked the podcast back to the forefront of my attention and inspired me to get off my butt and launch it. No doubt I rushed it, and episode one was actually produced several weeks beforehand. Regardless, it didn't help that I had just got done watching that viral video put out by Jonathan Pye. Maybe you've seen this. Had something like 87 million views on last count. That's the video. Jonathan Pye, I think, is kind of a comedic journalist. And in this video, he excoriates the left for creating the conditions for the rise of Donald Trump through what he called the sanctimonious governing of speech that large portions of the left have become known for. I agreed with much of that video and probably won't come as a surprise after having listened to that episode where I said, you know, much of the same stuff that he said. But regardless, I don't take what I said in that episode back, but I do take back the things I could and should have said but failed to. So this episode is my desire to fill in some of those things that I should have said. Now, in case you haven't noticed, a major war is being fought right now, and it is very much over the content of your beliefs. As it pertains to this election, some of this battle centers on the question of just how racist or misogynistic Donald Trump really is. Now, oddly, for months, it didn't seem very debatable from the point of view that one side, namely his, or that of his supporters, weren't offering much in the way of a debate, which is to say they weren't denying the comments their guy was making and that were going viral and that we all heard ad nauseum. The case against him was just too easy to make. But we are past the election now, and a debate has emerged, and we are now told emphatically by his staff and his supporters that he is not a racist or misogynistic or what have you. Much of this battle has to do with the media and what is or isn't trusted by lay people. So trust in the media appears to be at an all-time low, or so I'm told, by the media. And this is ironic given how much alternative media, think about the stuff people are blogging in their underpants and are putting out there on the internet, which ends up being regurgitated on your Facebook news feed. Think about how much of this stuff is prevalent now. There's an endless amount of garbage, and many of your neighbors, perhaps even you, perhaps me, are falling for it because it comes packaged in the same fonts and color graphics as legitimate media. And it strikes a chord with our ideological priors, and we can't resist the clickbait, and so we share it on our social media pages. This is surely a sinister phenomenon owed largely to the prevalence of artificially intelligent web crawlers, which are behind the scenes of much of what's on the internet now. And these web crawlers, automated bots, if you will, what they do is they seek to marry your consumption preferences with news and advertisements and so on designed to meet those preferences. It's hard not to see that this has much potential for harm, though I personally haven't come fully to terms with how I feel about all of that yet. Regardless, so much of what is debated simply comes down to which news source you trust. And many of us can't even agree on basic facts, whose empirical bases are in plain sight and where disagreement under more normal circumstances would have seemed impossible, but there it is. So this is the state of 2016, and it seems this will get worse before it gets better. I certainly hope I'm wrong about that. Which leads me to the topic of so-called gaslighting. Gaslighting is a term used in psychology. It actually originates from the title of a movie from the 1930s, and it works like this. Someone has a memory, particularly a direct memory. A direct memory is more to the point because they admit of very little doubt. And the person committing gaslighting will continuously deny what this person knows, perhaps through stubborn questioning or other obfuscation tricks, but even just through plain denials, until the victim actually doubts his or her own memory. Now, it's not hard to see that this is a form of mental abuse, and my sense is that large portions of the entire Trump campaign has employed gaslighting on a social scale that has no modern parallel that I'm aware of. Recall one of the standout commercials, television commercials in this election, the one released by the Clinton campaign immediately following the debate between running mates Tim Kaine and Mike Pence. Tim Kaine would cite, in some cases verbatim, statements made by Donald Trump during the campaign, incendiary comments like the need to punish women for having abortions or publicly advising in favor of nuclear proliferation. And Mike Pence would deny the claim, that is, he would gaslight it, with this sort of smug look on his face as if the claim was ridiculous, as if he had never heard such absurd statements made before, as if the entire American public couldn't remember what they clearly remembered just 2 weeks before. And then the commercial would cut to footage of Donald Trump saying exactly what Kaine said he had said. And the juxtaposition was eerie, to say the least. You know, here was a public example, a half a dozen or so of them, and in full view of millions of viewers, of the future vice president clearly lying about what his running mate had been running around the country saying. That roughly half of the electorate saw this and was shocked by the obvious gaslighting is probably irrelevant. What seems more relevant was that the gaslighting the other 50%, the vote Trump and Pence were counting on, it worked to some degree. Now, it's only a bit ironic that Mike Pence, a public figure known for his evangelical Christianity and presumed adherence to the Ten Commandments, felt so much ease in breaking the Ninth Commandment, but I digress. So has Donald Trump ridden a campaign full of racism, misogyny, xenophobia, and so on? It's hard not to start with the birther movement that I believe goes back to about 2008, at least, which Donald Trump championed regardless of what he has been gaslighting us on recently. It's hard to deny the racist element in the birther movement given its seditious nature, but there has always been a clever deniability built into the way Trump talks. He, quote, just asks questions, unquote, or always finds a way to feign ignorance when no one else is able to, which is, of course, the way conspiracy theories work. As opposed to making the direct claims contained within the innuendo, and there's certainly nothing but innuendo in these claims, as far as I know, Trump never publicly claimed Obama wasn't born in the U.S., he instead asked the question repeatedly, over and over, and pretended every piece of evidence that surfaced was unclear or faked or otherwise illegitimate, as if he had special access to the truth that nobody else apparently had access to. And it was obviously dishonest and corrupt and the work of a sociopathic bullshitter, if not for the fact it was designed for certain audiences and, to my mind, flirted way too closely with racism to be called anything but. He could technically deny it was racist, but the splitting of hairs required to make that denial seem reasonable is obviously just a logical technicality. And even if he wasn't personally racist, he was clearly flirting with it, stoking the flames in real racists, and for a clear and specific purpose that was obvious to everybody. And personally, I say fuck him for that action alone. You know, racist or not, that was 100% racist, regardless of how he personally feels about things, and it's hard to see how you wiggle out of that. Now, I don't feel like going through the countless racist and misogynistic pieces of public record that you all have seen repeated and heard repeated numerous times, like the endorsement of the beating of the Black Lives Matter protester at his rally in November of 2015, or the ads that he took out in the New York Times for falsely accusing the so-called Central Park Five. Those are those five young black gentlemen who were accused of raping a woman and went to jail for it, only to be exonerated by DNA evidence, an exoneration that led to their release from prison, and only to have Donald Trump double down on the accusation, despite the DNA evidence exonerating them. You know, or the statements about Mexicans being criminals and rapists and so on. The list is long, folks, and quite boring at this point, but the current campaign of gaslighting is in full effect, and we are told by no less than Trump himself that he is the least racist person alive. which is just as believable as him saying that nobody had more respect for women than he did after publicly bragging about breaking into the dressing rooms of beauty pageant contestants so that he could see them naked. What are we supposed to make of this stuff? There's another psychological phenomenon at work here, and it is the so-called illusory truth effect. Now, this is the phenomenon whereby one hears or is told a falsehood, a lie, over and over, and the mind becomes convinced of its truth due to the way our minds find attraction to repetition. So you know, the slogan goes, you repeat a lie enough and people will believe it, and it's literally true. Of course, this phenomenon fits in well with some of my personal philosophical interests because I think it can be explained easily with a simple appeal to the idea that free will isn't what it's cracked up to be. Not to get too sidetracked here, but as I mentioned in episode one, I have two overarching contentions with respect to free will. One is that it doesn't exist, that there is no good evidence for it, at least not the kind of evidence one normally considers legitimate in other domains of rationality. And two, to the extent that I can entertain that free will exists, whatever evidence one musters for its existence, which of course would be the data from introspection, this evidence actually leads toward the conclusion that free will is far from being perfectly free, that it only exists occasionally, and to the extent it exists, only in degrees. In other words, in no case is the idea of a radically free will plausible, and I believe much of modern psychology corroborates this view. So the idea being brought up here, the illusory truth effect, is one such example. A common sense view, one that I think is totally wrong, but let's just entertain it, is that people simply employ their free will to the task of forming beliefs, right? So you and I, we're all presented with evidence every day of our lives, and we all simply choose what we believe or refuse to believe. Now, if you find that plausible, it's still subject to manipulation as long as you see that free will only exists occasionally or partially. The illusory truth effect would count as one such manipulation. And the sense I have about this election as it relates to the media coverage and the gaslighting going on within the Trump campaign is that the illusory truth effect is very much being relied upon with the now constant denials of racist, misogynistic, and related attributes that beforehand seemed easy enough to apply to Trump. I mean, all one had to do was recall the things he said. So yes, I believe the evidence against Trump is rather damning. It's overwhelming. The fact that this is even a conversation seems strange in and of itself. And the alternative doesn't seem much better. On his blog, the economist and libertarian David Friedman recently asked, if given the fact Trump has succeeded beyond such wild odds and against so much common wisdom that predicted his failure, that instead of calling him crazy, as many of us were inclined to do, is it rather not appropriate to call him crazy like a fox? That we are now rationally bound to revising our previous judgments about him given his unexpected success? What is the alternative to the standard narrative about Trump given the ludicrous things he has said? That it was all just a ploy to garner the vote of a certain segment of the population? To appeal to the base instincts of a large portion of the electorate, the instincts that Trump's own internal sense told him the Democratic nominee would not appeal to? How would that make you feel if you were a Trump supporter to learn all of the racist and misogynistic innuendo was little more than clickbait, designed to get you to vote for the guy who, in some sense, and this is only germane if you have been following how much of his incendiary talk he has walked back since the election, was really just going to be a moderate centrist, perhaps not too far or unlike Clinton herself. As I mentioned in my last episode, this is an area that has animated the cartoonist Scott Adams. Sorry, that pun was intended. And he's been relishing in the, I'm not sure what you would call it, but in the post-election era, he has described the cognitive dissonance of those who insist Trump is the new Hitler. And this is germane because I am inclined to fall into that camp, frankly. The idea is that all of Trump's lunatic talk, in addition to the racist, misogynistic, xenophobic flirtatiousness in his speech, was more or less just persuasion techniques, that you don't really know the man behind the techniques, he was just a salesman, and that now that he has power, he will tone down everything and become quite reasonable in his policy prescriptions. The cognitive dissonance, of course, belongs to those on the left who insist Trump is the new Hitler and who are now scrambling to find their Hitler in the new world where Hitler seems rather benign and suddenly more soft-spoken and more or less in the center. Now, the short history since the election seems to be corroborating Adam's point of view somewhat, but it leaves me with a very cynical feeling at the same time. I am already inclined to Adams' point of view when it comes to persuasion techniques, the manipulation of people through various strategies that do not assume free will exists. In fact, they assume the opposite. But the problem I have is this. The unwritten understanding most of us have with selling and buying is that while we all acknowledge techniques exist to improve our ability to sell or to improve our ability to resist being sold by someone whose only goal is to get us to buy, that at the end of the day, it really matters what is being sold. It really matters how much horsepower the engine has, or if it really is gluten-free like what the marketing says, and so on. Persuasion techniques are about how the sausage is made, but there is also the sausage itself, and if you take Adams' point of view to the extreme, and I think he does, the product itself hardly matters. In fact, it does not matter. And this is presumably true because the entire electorate is a group of people who don't know what Adams knows and so mistakenly think products matter and so are manipulated by persuasion techniques, and the more effective persuader wins. In this worldview, not only does the product not matter, you are left with no tools to even know the facts about the product. Worse, when you have a split in the country like we do today, a division on just who this man is, with so much incendiary language on public record, you're left asking some very uncomfortable questions. What did his supporters think they were buying, while conveniently pretending all that incendiary talk was something other than what it was? Do they even know what they were buying? Similarly, those of us who oppose Trump, and for reasons that seem perfectly adequate as reasons to oppose anyone, what did we think we were opposing if it was just going to pass that all of that was just show, just reality TV, when the real product is obscured by, well, by everything the salesman was actually saying? Is that not a strange situation to be in, where we continually ask, who is this guy? We ask because the product does matter, and it always has. And the only reasonably accurate way of knowing what the facts are with respect to the product, which in this case is a man, and before we buy the product, which in this case means to elect him, is to listen to what he says and take into account the corroborating evidence surrounding him. I think this manner of turning talk of products into talk solely about selling technique is interesting and fruitful, but it leaves everything that matters left unsaid. The big bait and switch might have many precedents, but it still strikes the civil person as offensive. When a candidate seems to end up being nothing like you thought, you are left wondering, well, what was the point of having an election? And this is not to say I believe Trump is no longer who I thought he was. I follow him on Twitter, and he's still the same tweeting buffoon as I think he's been all along. His public rants and childish tantrums haven't abated. He just responded to the recount efforts spearheaded by Jill Stein by insulting her, as he does. And he did the same with the New York Times. So there doesn't appear to be any change in his temperament. Regardless, if you can't tell, I do make it a point to look for viewpoints in direct opposition to my own. I would like to protect myself from continuing in error to the extent that I can. And one way to go about doing that is to actively seek serious arguments in opposition to your own, and to take them in, as well as possible. Now, this is absolutely harder than it sounds, but it does get easier with practice. I do have some cracks in my armor, as it were, in my assessment that Donald Trump is a little more than a racist, misogynistic asshole. That he is easily baited with a poor temperament is hard to deny, and my assessment there, as I said, hasn't changed, but my sense is that it would take considerably good behavior for extended periods of time to alter this judgment, but is that so out of the question? What is probably a far more important question is this. Despite my reluctance, a reluctance many of you share, to take Trump seriously as an ethical man or to take the possibility as real that he actually holds values roughly aligned with those consistent with modern civil society, it is nonetheless a preferred outcome that as time progresses, he would become or appear to become less racist and or misogynistic. That's a strange-sounding thing to say, let alone hear oneself say, but the truth of it is quite obvious, if not for the fact it runs counter to the tribalism so many of us instinctively cling to. I am literally leaving open the divergent possibilities that if Trump improves, it is because he improved himself, or because he was always better and it just took me some time to grasp it. The statement I am making is agnostic about that and just reflects an obvious fact, and that fact is this. It is better to have a racist become less racist, even if it wasn't him that changed, but rather my perception of him. That would be an improvement too. Isn't that obvious? The problem is that it runs so counter to our base instincts. Some of us, and I have been guilty of this, when confronted with someone we believe to be unethical, would rather exalt our superiority and greater wisdom and shame the person, as opposed to simply have him or her get better, or seek the possibility that our opinions were unfair and he was already better. There's a somewhat overlooked fact about this election that, considering its relevance to what is true and false, couldn't really be overstated, and it is this. Emotions have run extraordinarily high all around. Of all the firsts and oddities and new territory and new ground this election represented, isn't that one as well? The level of emotional engagement? Nobody needs much in the way of reflection to realize that when emotions run that high, the possibility of error is equally high. It does require some reflection to realize that such error is just as likely to be your own. If you can't tell, I'm consciously running on this possibility and will be actively seeking to make corrections to the extent I can. And to the extent I have any latitude with you, I would ask that you consciously try running on this possibility as well. So this is the note I am ending on, one that is, I hope, hopeful. Thank you for listening.